since we're both writers and we enjoy words, I had a few questions that I put down here. I just finished your book, Cape House, and it was absolutely fabulous. You're such a wordsmith, and it's so wonderfully quotable. I mean, I've got a whole page of stuff here that I'm looking at. Bengal spice tea like a hamster, drinking Bengal spice tea like a hamster from water bowl. Ben has a meeting today in Boston, and there's no way I'm hanging around here with baby Stalin. But then they found that fen-phen makes holes in your heart. Mom stopped taking them. I wouldn't have stopped. I could relate to so much of your book, and it was just so wonderful. I mean, the biggest question that I had, though, is after or while you were writing that, what did the rest of your family think of your writing about them in your book?
I've had, like, a mixed bag of reactions. My brothers are a little bit, they decided to keep themselves a little bit removed from it, which, you know, for their personal reasons, and that's totally fine. My father had a very emotional reaction to it, just because he said it was like reliving the experience. And for him, like the 13 months of my mother's illness are still something that he's dealing with 8 years later.
Sure.
So for him, It was a powerful experience, and he said he enjoyed the book, but it also obviously brought up a lot for him. But he's amazingly supportive. He was actually my biggest source for the book, aside from my own notes, because anytime I had a question about their history, I would call him, and he would tell me the story. And the blog that I talk about in the book, I use that as a reference as I was writing to sort of keep tabs on how things develop. My sister has been the most involved. She's amazing. She's just really supportive and proud. And even, like, I gave her a draft of it before I published it, and she was like, oh, you know, this isn't totally accurate. You might want to write it like this. And, by the way, you should probably put this in also, because... Yeah, so she really wanted to be involved and kind of put her two cents in. So, you know...
Everybody
has their own reaction. You know, I have one of my sisters-in-law who is like, I'm really proud of you, and I'm really glad the grandkids have this to read, but I just can't read it. And,
right.
You know, it's too emotional for her, and I totally get it.
Yeah, I do, and I can relate. My second book, Far Away, A Suburban Boy's Story as a Victim of Sex Trafficking, I co-wrote that with the victim. It was an experience that he had in St. Louis in 1975. He was very appreciative of the book itself and my writing. It was very difficult for him to do, especially touring and interviewing later on. We had started a three-state tour, and then he finally said to me, you know, look, Dan, you know, I want this to go big, but I just can't do this anymore, because of his PTSD that happened with it. So what's interesting to me is that people see our work that we do as wordsmiths, putting down a story in a page, they see it from possibly a very different perspective than we do. It may be our baby that we have. You know, the Cape House is your baby. I've got three books, and I'm working on, I'm going to be publishing my fourth this year. Those are my babies, but they're really not, because those babies, they go out into the world, and then different people have different perspectives.
Totally different reactions, exactly.
Yeah, and then it really becomes their own, it's not ours anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree with that, and I disagree, meaning, like, it's still mine, but then whoever reads it, it becomes their version. I was actually just having this conversation with somebody the other day about reality and how maybe the reality really only is what a person sees it as. Maybe there is no, like, definite reality, because everybody's version of reality is different.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then the book is still mine. It's still my baby. It's just somebody else's experience of it is different.
That's right. It's sort of an alternate reality of it.
Exactly.
Exactly. Oh, I get it. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's good to hear this stuff. You know, I think I was going to ask you, what questions do you have specifically for me? Now we're both published authors. We've kind of have different life paths, but we do have some similarities too. My spirituality is very important to me, as your faith life is very important to you. I appreciated that angle in the book, and it was very rich for me. And by the way, when I was in seminary, Lutherans are very intellectual, so I learned Hebrew. So it was you know, and seeing things like the Shema. I mean, I know what that stuff is. I have theological training. But it was very accessible too, and I think it really added a nice dimension to the book. And I hope that you continue doing that. And we also have a similarity with recovery. Eating disorder is yours, and also alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And with me, it's drugs and alcohol. Drugs first, alcohol is kind of a second rung thing, and depression. As I became more healthy, and I've been sober now for a little over 6 years, I found that writing, for me, and being an author, because I switched careers, I used to be a pastor, and now I'm a freelance writer and an author, that was a very healthy thing for me, because I have this creative outlet that I can continue to do. It doesn't pay great. although I have to say that I'm more than...
No artist is in it for the money.
No, that's right. But I, when people ask me, well, what do? I say I'm a freelance writer. And that really is true. I do make a living at doing this, but it's, you know, I always wish it were more.
Obviously.
Let's talk about this recovery in writing. I mean, this is a good theme. We have about 10, 15 more minutes here. I think we should cover this. People will be interested in it. What's your perspective with you getting healthier and then how writing say some stuff about it.
Okay, I will say some stuff about that. So first of all, writing was an integral part of my early recovery because I was encouraged each day to write, you know, like a page of a journal or whatever. And
right,
for me,
right.
You know, when I was in active addiction, I had no idea how I felt or thought about anything because, number one, I was numbing all of my feelings out. And number two, I was such a people pleaser. I was constantly performing for people that I had no actual opinion of anything. I was only curious about what other people's opinions were so I could have that same opinion. Mm-hmm. And so writing was really the way I got introduced to myself because I got to see my own thoughts and feelings down on paper and realize, oh, that's how I feel about that because I have no idea. And I still to this day have a thing where something will happen and I'm like, okay, I have to wait 48 hours to see how I actually feel about this because I have this like delayed reaction it takes me time to figure that out. It's not, you know, an instinctive thing. Obviously, I've gotten better at it. But anyway, the other piece with writing is that it's a flip in that number one, it functions for me, meaning I'm not obviously not addicted to it, but it does function for me the same way that food and alcohol and drugs did in that when I'm doing it, I forget about everything else. I forget to eat, which is like what? I forget to eat. I forget to go to the bathroom. I forget. I'm just so locked in it.
You're in the zone.
Yeah, I'm in that zone. It's my husband is into hypnotism. So he says it's like a hypnotic effect.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, that's a really... I had an experience years and years and years ago. I must have been a teenager. And it was this very brief moment where I thought to myself, for a split second, I wasn't thinking about anything else except the moment I was in. And I was like, wow, what a relief. I'm really happy in this very moment when I'm not thinking about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me is the experience of writing. Because when everything else shuts down and I'm hyper-focused in that moment, it's really peaceful and a wonderful, it's just wonderful. And then to get to see something created, like you're really, you know, in the Jewish faith, we really believe that our job in this world is to emulate God through giving and doing good things for other people, etc. And also through the act of creation. That's why Jews have a lot of kids, because we, you know, we like to create things. So the act of writing to look and see that you've created something for me is really sort of doing God's work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say that if you're given much, you're given much responsibility. And so, you know, if someone's given a gift, then like it's meant to be used for good. And for me, that's why I felt so strongly about including the piece about recovery in the book is because, you know, alcoholism and drug addiction, they're pretty much you know, they're common conversation at this point. Like, it's
yeah.
obviously, you know, addiction still has its little stigmas attached to it and stuff that still needs
right.
to, you
right.
know, but in general, like, there's almost like a glamour effect to, like, you know, the Rolling Stones destroying a penthouse at the St. Pierre. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, sure.
It's not unheard of.
But your book doesn't specifically focus just on the recovery story. I mean, that's really it's something in the periphery of your story. Although, I mean, I would say it's very central to who you are, but it's very much in the periphery. Whereas my books, well, I mean, at least the first one, I mean, it's a Hazel and Betty Ford publication, the Sobriety, a graphic novel.
Right.
That's all it's about. I mean, that's the whole thing. Whereas, really, in the second book and in the third, which is more of a church production, in the fourth, it's also on the periphery there. You know, I wanted to speak. I had a question. One of the things I read in and it's a quote from the Cape House is. Gauguin is just like me. The painter Gauguin, when he went to Tahiti, he was seeking once again that zone of being in just in the now and being able to be fully creative in his space. And you know, being you know, an addict himself, you know, a damaged person, he wanted to find that need, but he didn't quite find it there.
No.
Whereas you know, my life isn't perfect, and I'm sure yours isn't either, but I think that we're probably at a different level of awareness than where he was at.
Gauguin never actually achieved success until after he had died. Nobody,
yeah.
you know, his work wasn't even, he got no real recognition until
after. We'll hope that that's not the same for us, that somehow we have to.
No, for sure. We're going to be huge bestsellers, like, next week, like, no problem. But
right,
I'm saying.
Exactly. But that is yeah. something about writing, that it is an act of immortality, because you take your thoughts, you put them on paper, and you put it out in the world, and you can be gone, but that remains. And I think
right.
that's one of the things that. As an artist, you know, I strive after that. I want to have that because it you know, it lives beyond me. I mean, it's sort of an immortal
right.
act. You know, the question I have is, Linda, how does your addictions and your more or less human condition make you a better writer? Because that, and you know, that's kind of the core focus of something that interests me a lot, and I think that will interest your listeners and your readers on your blog is, how do your weaknesses and your difficulties that you had in life make you a better writer and an artist?
Oh, man, I love that question. My weaknesses and my human frailties are what qualify me to be a member of the human race. So it gives
sure.
me something to tell the truth about. I mean, one of the big things for me in my writing, no matter what I'm writing, is about telling the truth. Because
right.
I found that by telling the truth, it gives people that safety net for them to tell the truth.
Your book is just chock full of it, too.
Right. And the reason for that, aside from the fact that I function that way, is because there's so much surface garbage. You know, I say to people a lot, like, I have no threshold for small talk. I can't do it. I just can't do it. It's painful for me.
Yeah, I noticed that when I first called you. We were trying to make some small talk here.
Yeah.
Well, you want to talk about things with depth and value.
Exactly. Yeah, and listen, obviously there's a time and a place for, you know, hi, how are you? But the point is, like, I can't have that same conversation 20 times. I need to
sure.
be able to create relationships with people and to relate
right.
with them. And I find that, you know, when the focus is on that pretty exterior where everything's fine, it just facilitates loneliness and isolation.
Sure.
And we have a very, you know, we live in a very isolated society where people are right in each other's faces. We're in each other's lives all the time, social media, right? But like, how close are we? And so for me, telling, you know, those human frailties are like the impetus of my writing. They're the source of inspiration for me
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
by writing about them, they allow me to, A, bring myself to life, and B, my readers come to me. I mean, the most wonderful thing for me is for people to come back and say, you know, wow, I totally relate with blah, 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 and blah. Like, that's the whole point. That's the point. For me, I don't see the point of glossing over those things. That's the meat. That's the good stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously, every member of the human race they have the human condition, and they have weaknesses, vulnerabilities, and failures. But I would say, I mean, I can't speak for every writer or artist for that point, but I don't think my writing really started where the rubber hit the road was after I had went through what I went through, which is being arrested in a blackout as a Lutheran minister in Western North Dakota. I mean, I thought my life was over, but my story was only just beginning at that point. And going through that baptism of fire, if you want to call it something like that, it just gave my writing more depth and meaning. And it's not to say that before then I was just writing superficial blather, but it got much better after that, at that point. And I also became much more interested in writing things that are about the big questions. Now, your book just was chock full of quotes, and I said this to you before. I want to read something you're writing here, and you'll know it. And what I put, I'm looking on my screen right now, I put wow right before it. One of death's good qualities is the callus it forms over our memories, reducing pain aged over decades into tiny, barely discernible pinprick. Our histories look different through the prism of loss, the ups and downs, blending into one long, love-colored memory. And, of course, with that, you were speaking of the relationship with your father and your mother.
Right.
And my question to you is, don't you think that is what our relationship is as broken people who became artists and became writers?
Yeah.
Our memories, I see it as a parallel, a metaphor or an analogy. I look at my life and the pain that was there in the past, and, you know, you speak in language of the rooms, we don't wish to shut the door on it, but we don't dwell on it constantly, the damage, the wreckage that we caused in the past. But it's, in a way, we died when we got sober, or when we got healthier, when we lost weight, when we dealt with the things that were killing us in the first place, that part of us died.
Right. I mean, later in the book, I talk about how that experience, like the pain and devastation, is sort of half of the circle with the recovery and the homecoming later on. It's all part of the same process. You can't experience one without the other.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's true. I look back, and I say this later in the book also, I look back on my disease, when I was active in the disease, as the beginning part of a process, meaning that was the crucible I needed that refined me into the person I am.
It
was,
I can really relate with the term crucible. That's absolutely.
Yeah, it's,
I dig it.
They're not two separate things. It's all one long, you know, that love-colored memory. I can look back on it now almost with a sense of affection for that person and gratitude to that person for screwing up so badly and, you know, being in so much pain. And, you know, for me, growing up as an obese person, I really got a different perspective on people and on society. You know, when you grow up as someone who's treated marginally or you know, less than human, or, you know, you're meant to feel like you have to apologize for yourself, there's no way you can come out on the other side of that and not have compassion. There's just no way, because you know what that is. You know, every time I'm in a movie theater and I see someone who's like struggling to squeeze through the aisles to find a seat, or, you know, those like memes on, you know, those like they have like people of Walmart and it's like these really obese people and they take these pictures of them. Like, my heart breaks because I'm that person. Like, I still, I know exactly what that is. That doesn't go away.
Right.
But that's something I like about me, because I don't take that stuff for granted. And, you know, I think I would be a much different person, a much different parent for sure, if I had never gone through that.
Well, not just parent, but writer, because it makes you more empathetic.
Yeah.
And empathy is, I mean, that's what it's about. Writers are noticers. And that's not to say that we notice every little bit of minutia that's out there, because books like that drive me crazy. But but we notice the things that matter, and we make a connection with it, and that's the conveyance of human empathy. And that's what I really see writing about. I appreciate this a lot. I think that your book is fantastic. The Cape House, a memoir. Mine, Our Sobriety, a graphic novel. A Far Away, a Suburban Boy's Story, is a Victim of Sex Trafficking. Papa Luther, which is a comic book for kids about the life of Martin Luther. And my fourth book that's coming out that I was excited to tell you about, because there's a lot of touch points that I had as far as topic-wise in that book, and that's a book on resilience. It's called Resiliency and Spirituality, The Search to Overcome and Thrive in the Face of Hardship or Trauma. Mm-hmm. And it's nonfiction, and every chapter I deal with a different person's story, and I've got some really neat stuff in there. I interview a Syrian refugee, and we have the whole gamut of spirituality, from sort of agnostics to evangelical Christians to Muslim, and it was very interesting doing those interviews. So would look forward to getting that published, and just the gift of words. This has been great. I wish you well. I hope we can continue to talk and chat, and I hope this facilitates some discussion for your blog.
Yeah, thank you so much, Daniel. I really appreciate it.